Velkommen til Kaptare Podcast episode 44. I forbindelse med valget I USA som var I går, her jeg sitter nå, onsdag 4. november år 2020, så har jeg tatt en prat med en amerikaner. Han heter David Heilmann. Han befinner seg I Norge akkurat nå. Det får dere høre alt om. David en trommeslager fra New Jersey. Han generelt en fantastisk fin fyr, en herremann, uten tvil. Han en løper, han en, hva skal jeg si, en entertainer, som vi sier det. Han har jeg blitt kjent med via Sondre Lerche. Den historien og mer til får dere I intervjuet som jeg nettopp har gjort, så å si nettopp I hvert fall. Jeg prøver å holde det kort, fordi denne episoden skal jeg få ut I dag, på dagen. Et par ting. Kaptaremesterskapet, jeg la opp en fellesløp på Strava. Lørdag klokken 9 om morgenen, vi kjører hver lørdag fremover. Jeg vet at det strenge tider rundt korona, covid og alt dette. Vi blir nok en liten gjeng, vi holder avstand, vi holder pratetempo, så lærer dere løypa, og så kan dere løpe den fort en annen dag for muligheten til å vinne et par løpesko fra Altra for kvinner og menn som får den beste tiden. Det Strava som gjelder her altså, du må løpe segmentet, det derfor jeg skal lose dere gjennom. Andreplassen får Ofos restitusjonssandaler, og tredjeplassen får Injinji tåsokker, som Dave og jeg, og Sondre fan av. Den historien får dere også. For mulighet til å kjøpe Altra løpsko, så det siste sjans nå. Gå inn på Altra Running Nordic. Altrarunning.no, unnskyld. Link I podcastnotatene, skriv kaptare 25 og få 25% av et par sko. Husk å sjekke amerikansk størrelse der altså. Det viktig, viktig. Ok, hva skal jeg si? Det enda ikke avgjort valget I USA. Vi alle vanvittig opptatt av dette, uten at man helt skjønner rasjonaliteten I det, men slik det. Vi krysser fingrene for at vi skal lande på den riktige siden denne gang. Hva som den riktige siden, vel, det skal vi ikke komme inn på. Uansett, fantastisk å sitte her og lage podcast igjen. Gud, som jeg har savnet det, det utrolig moro. Det nok en tid for å gjøre litt mer podcastepisoder over telefonen. Altså, vi kaller det telefonen, men hva det da? Over internett da. På avstand. Det ikke så enkelt å få folk til å stille I lille studio akkurat nå. Ting litt annerledes, men podcast skal det bli. Det får bli litt ting over telefonen. Håper dere har det godt. Håper dere løper. Håper dere tar vare på dere selv. Håper dere har litt tid til å reflektere. Skal anbefale to dokumentarer som ligger på Netflix akkurat nå. Den ene The Social Dilemma. Alle har Netflix, har du ikke det? Ikke det vanlig I dag, alle har Netflix, og hvis ikke du har det, så anbefaler jeg å bare tegne et lite prøvedemang, bare for å se den dokumentaren. Utrolig viktig, bare for å forstå litt dynamikken I disse sosiale mediene vi holder på med, og hvorfor vi så hektet. Det som dop. Du bare må ha det. Prøv å legge det fra deg, og du får abstinenser. Og hvis ikke du gjør det, så det fantastisk og flott for deg. Jeg kjenner folk som bare skyr det, holder seg unna det. Jeg har prøvd, nå jeg sugd inn I malstrømmen Facebook igjen. Jeg sverget jo at jeg aldri skulle være der, hverken der eller på LinkedIn eller noe som helst. Nei, måtte krype til korset, sånn det. Det profesjonelle liv krever det. Vi får se hvor det bærer, men uansett, se The Social Dilemma på Netflix og bli klokere. Ork det, gidde. Ta den tiden. Sett deg ned med en god kopp te. Kamomille-te kan anbefales for å roe nervene. Gjerne med noe sterkt oppi hvis du har behov for det. Det lov det også, bare pass på å få nattesøvnen din, men jeg mener det, alvorlig talt, social dilemma må ses, må ses. Vi må forstå, vi må søke å forstå, må forsøke å bli litt klokere hele tiden, ekspandere litt hele tiden, søke dypere og videre og bredere og høyere. Det det vi vil. Vi vil bli bedre mennesker, så vi kan leve våre liv fullt og helt, og ikke stykkevis og delt, som Ibsen skrev, også en klok mann. Den andre dokumentaren er, og den husker jeg ikke navnene på i farten, nå skal jeg ikke begynne å google det mens jeg snakker med dere, men den er også på Netflix, og den ligger vel på forsiden, og den er lagd av David Attenborough, som handler om... Ja, jeg skal ikke si hva den handler om egentlig, jeg skal bare si at det er David Attenborough, 93 år gammel, klok mann, sitt vitnesbyrd over hva han har sett og reflektert over i alle sine år her på planeten, og da mener jeg planeten, mannen har vært overalt og sett det med egne øyne. Det er en helt fantastisk dokumentar, den er utrolig viktig, og selv om vi sitter og ser den og føler litt maktesløshet som vi gjør som små mennesker under solen, så ikke fortvil, for det er håp, og det David Attenborough gjør, Sir David Attenborough, selvfølgelig, han tenner et lite håp om at vi kan redde dette her, selv om det ser mørkt ut, så er ikke svartmale noe som helst, fordi... Det er mulighet for å se solen der over skyene. Apropos solen, den er tilbake her i studio jeg sitter, og det er godt. Nå har det regnet mye, men ikke noe mer prat nå. Nå skal vi til regnbyen Bergen faktisk, og snakke med David. Tusen takk for at dere tok dere tid til å lytte til dette budskapet, og kos dere med David. David Herman,
yes.
We are rolling. I thank you for taking the time to come on this episode of the Kaptari podcast.
Well, you know, Marius, all I have right now is time. So it's really no problem.
I had a short introduction of you, but to put it in your own words, who are you, Dave, as we call you? Who are you?
You know, I'm just a regular guy. I put my pants on one leg at a time, just like everyone else. No, I'm kidding. So basically, I am probably the reason why I'm here is because I'm Sondre Lerche's drummer.
Yes.
So that's really what comes to mind first.
Yeah.
You know, so that's basically who I am. And I'm a dad to a dog.
Yeah.
Who I love very much. I got him from Russia. And
that's new, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is that news?
Yeah, it's news. It's huge news. Yes, there's a big election going on, but this is the biggest news.
This is the news that we want to talk about today. Your Russian dog. How and when did that come into place?
Well, my girlfriend is she's been wanting a dog for a long time, and she just sort of got on an app called Pet Finder, and they basically show you different pictures of dogs that are up for adoption. So she had like four dogs. She really loves Australian Shepherds, and she was looking at a lot of them. And then there was just this like kind of, she called him a wild card. He was just like this very interesting looking dog who had the face of an author.
Oh.
He looked like, you know, some sort of philosopher. Like
the face of an author, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
That's great.
And if you saw the picture, and I'll send it to you, you'd agree. He looks just like a very, you know, introspective monk with this great little sort of goatee beard kind of thing. And
amazing.
He's just sweet, soulful eyes. Just he looks like, you know, some kind of philosopher inside a dog.
Yeah.
And we were like, well... what's up with him? And he's just a total mutt. He's just like a mixture of terrier and probably shih tzu, maybe dachshund, some schnauzer.
I love the idea that actually animals can be philosophers and authors too.
Yeah.
It's just that they use another language. We kind of forget that because they don't use words. They aren't like, you know, communicating, but dogs and any animal will communicate, but in a different manner.
Yeah, and it's taught me so much. And, you know, you hear that often, but I mean, it really was sort of mind opening for me, because I haven't had a pet since I was a kid living in my mom's house, because, you know, as a traveling musician, you just don't have a pet. This is not something you do. And I love animals, and I grew up with animals my whole life. And when my cat died, when I was in my 20s, and that was the cat that I had since I was 9 years old. And so she lived to be 18 years old, and we were super tight, and I just loved her so much. And when she died, I just was like, that's it. I can never have another pet. And I know I'm not alone in this one. So many people have felt that way. And I was just like, that's it. I'm done. Like, I can't go through that heartbreak again. And, you know, and that's it. And I never did. And, you know, you're traveling all the time. It's just, you can't even have a plant, let alone a pet. So that was that. But then my girlfriend was like, you know, she really wanted a dog. And I was like, okay. And somehow having someone else make that decision just made it easier for me, because I could kind of be like, well, this is her dog. You know, she's making this decision, and I'm here to support it. And when we saw his face, we were both like, yeah, this is the guy. And we didn't even know, or at least she probably knew, but I didn't know that he was in Russia.
Okay.
And
you saw a picture online.
Yeah. I'm like on Pet Finder, which is dogs in New Jersey, there's dogs everywhere. And
are these dogs that have been like pre-owned or lived with someone else and need to
move?
Well,
you sort of don't know.
No, okay.
Right? You sort of don't know, because Sochi, when it was gearing up for the Olympics, when they were going to host the Olympics, Sochi is like a beach town in Russia, which is strange, but it's like Kristiansand, I guess, of Russia.
Okay.
When they were gearing up for the Olympics, they were just euthanizing all the stray dogs and cats, because
I heard about
they wanted to clean up the city. So they're like, oh, let's get rid of all this. So different countries got wind of this, and they sort of formed a coalition and a treaty with Russia, saying, hey, instead of killing them, just send them to our country. We'll find homes for them there. So it's typically called Sochi Dogs. That's like the company that does this. So basically, they find a dog in Sochi that needs a home. They'll fly him or her to America with their shots. Any kind of hernia surgery that needs to be done, they'll spay or neuter them. And they just send them. You pick them up from the airport, and the people were super nice. They let you meet them, get to know them. Then you take them home, and you sort of live with them for a few weeks. And if after a couple weeks you feel like it's not a good fit, you can bring them back, of course. So it's really, they really take care of everything. So it was like $350 to get this dog, you know, fully vaccinated and everything, sent over from Russia. So it didn't cost any more money than getting a dog in America. He's so bizarre, and we just love him so much.
Do you know his age?
Or? The vet guessed about 4 years old.
Okay, okay. So he has
now.
A good
when we
one,
got him, he was two.
Yeah, yeah.
So now he's about four, and he was so, just so docile and chill. And we took him to like a Christmas party in Brooklyn at this big like artist loft, and there was just pottery happening and music and art, and he was just like chilling and hanging out and letting people pet him. And then 6 months later, he started to show his personality a bit more, because they're a little sneaky at first. They're like, I'm the sweetest little thing. I wouldn't hurt a fly. You're gonna want to keep me. And then after a while, they're like, I'm hungry, I want some food, what are you doing, get up.
And I'm actually a dog that grew up on the street, so I'm street smart, and I'm used to hustling, and I'm
and he was so good, though. He's never gone to the bathroom in the apartment. He's never, so I just think that he did have an owner who just sort of left him. And a lot of times in Europe, see, they feel differently about dogs than some cultures do. And so a lot of times, if they're just moving to a different house and they don't feel like bringing the dog, they'll just like say bye, and they'll just move and leave the dog in the street. A lot of people just like drive, they open up the door, let the dog out, and they keep going. You know, they just, they just do that. So I think he had a home because he was just so good about being in the house.
So he probably had some experience of living with someone. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, but that's so great. It used to be humans immigrating to the U.S. Now it's dogs.
Yeah.
From exactly. Russia and Europe. Well,
that was the fear that he came over to hack into our computer system to fix this election. You know, we were worried about that.
Yeah, actually, we're going to set a little context here because today's Wednesday, the 4th. There was an election yesterday in the U.S. You are actually, just to put that straight, you are actually in Norway. You're in Bergen. I'm in Oslo.
Yeah.
Yeah. So before we talk about the reason you're on is, of course, you're a runner. We're going to talk a little bit about that and the election. But you're here to support Sondre on the drums, finally. I know I saw him posting something about how to get you into the country and blah, blah, blah in these times. How did that work out?
Well, it's interesting because we've known about the possibility of a November tour for many months now, but we also weren't sure if it was going to happen because who knows if November came around and Norway would decide to shut down concerts again. Yeah. So we didn't know if they were going to happen, but we said, well, let's wait and see, and then we'll cross this bridge when we get to it. So the shows looked like they were happening. He was announcing them, and then it was time to get me over here. Mm-hmm. And I'm not used to being the one who's having a hard time getting here. Usually it's because the 3/4 of the band, including Sondre, is from Bergen. So I'm the American. Sondre also lives in America. So it's usually like, how do we get Chris and Alexander to America? That's always been the problem.
Yeah, that was so a problem last time, wasn't it?
Yeah, we had a big issue for the 2017 tour. Sondre paid a ridiculous amount of money to the American government to get these guys' visas to come in, and he even like paid extra to expedite the answer, and they're like, cool, thanks for the money, the answer is no. And they really have no basis. It's literally just if they decide to say yes or no. There's no guidelines, so that's very frustrating. And we were very bummed out that Alexander and Chris couldn't come to America. So we had to find a band in 24 hours to take their place.
Yeah,
a couple talented American guys named Jordan Brooks and Alan Markley. And we got a tour manager. We did all this like in the nick of time, and we just hit the road. So Sondre hadn't met any of these guys. I also hadn't met the bass player. He just came highly recommended from Alan Hampton, who's a great musician, plays with Andrew Bird. And so we just trusted the people we knew, and they showed up and they busted their butts, man. And they just knew everything, and they showed up, and we wound up having a tour, but we missed, our guys extremely. And so now for the first time, it's like, I'm the one who can't get in.
Which usually is no problem coming from the US.
Yeah, usually no problem. Yeah. I've been coming back and forth for 10 years.
Yeah,
it's no problem. And now it's like, well, what's going on? So Norway closed its borders because the COVID numbers were rising. And we had heard from some people. Sondre was asking a lot of people that the UDI were the people to contact. You fill out an application, you pay a bunch of money, and hopefully they'll give you a residence visa. Now, I don't need a residence visa to perform here.
No.
But we figured that if the borders were closed, if I had a residence visa, then they would have to let me in because I'm, you know, it's legal proof that I'm here to work and all that. But as time was growing near, and we still haven't heard from UDI, I'm already here. I still haven't heard an answer from them. We were just saying, well, we can't wait any longer. So we got to just jump on this. So Sondre put out a post on Facebook saying, does anyone have any tips or anything? And his cousin Petar showed us this like European commission that comes out. It's frequently updated, and it's all about, you know, how they're handling the COVID crisis. And in one of those, the very last chapter of that thing, it says that any performance artists, musicians who are needed for the show to actually happen, they're allowed in. Mm. So then when we saw that, we were like, okay, cool. So I just printed that out. And Sandra's like, can you leave on Saturday? I'm like, yeah. And this was a Thursday, right? So I just packed my bags for 7 weeks, went to the airport. And this experience I'm going to spend some time on because this is bizarre. So I've got this printed out piece of paper. We don't know if it's going to work or not, but I know that I'm going for it, right? So I show up to Newark Airport, and I'm the only person in the entire airport. And place is usually bustling, you know? And so I'm like, this feels weird. Then I started thinking, this doesn't look good for me. You know, like no one's flying and here I am thinking I'm going to accomplish something. So then I get to TSA and they're like, okay, come on in. It's just me, no one else. So there's about six TSA agents and we're just talking about the election coming up. I'm taking my time, taking off my shoes and my jacket. And usually you're just rushing to get through and I'm just chatting with everybody. We're having a nice time, you know? And I'm like, all right guys, have a good week. You know, have a good Thanksgiving, this and that. I keep walking and still the only guy walking to my gate, but I did show up 3 hours early because I was afraid of what it might be like. So as the flight drew near, about 10 people came to the gate as well. So I was on this big SAS flight, and yes, I'm going to plug SAS, SAS, because they're the best airline. They always treat musicians so well, and they let us bring our instruments on board. And,
I agree.
You know, it's just the best airline, man. We love them. So we get there. There's about 10 people on the flight, which means there's one person for every, like, I don't know, 10 rows or 15 rows. So there's no one around you. And the flight was totally smooth. Landed in Copenhagen, got out. And you know the Copenhagen airport, those halls are kind of narrow and everyone's always there connecting. So it's always, you're sort of in a mad dash to get through everybody and get to your connection and everything. But I was the only one. So I'm just walking through Copenhagen Airport, just stopping by the Lockdog Cruise to get a Danish and just kind of chill. And I'm like, it really felt like a dream. Oh, it was some alternate reality where you're the only guy in an airport. Like, it's just crazy.
Yeah, that's absurd.
So then I walk up to the border control in Copenhagen. And now, again, it's just me. You see, like, all these stanchions, you know, demarking a line that would typically be, I don't know, 20 minutes long or whatever. Mm-hmm. And here I am just walking up. So this guy could have spent an hour grilling me about what I'm doing and everything. So I'm like, okay, well, let's see what happens. I show up. He's like, hi, what are you doing coming to Norway? So I'm here to play some shows. And he's like, all right, great. Have fun. Stamps.
Oh, yeah.
That's it.
That's when you came into Norway or?
Well, that was when I came into Copenhagen.
Yeah, I came into Copenhagen. Yeah.
And I was like, okay, so I'm still, it hasn't really clicked with me yet that now I've gotten through the hard part. Yeah. I'm still like, well, okay, well, now how do I get into Norway? Are they going to give me a hard time? But then I arrive in Oslo and I just go to my connection flight for Bergen. And now I'm like, okay, well, maybe it's going to be tough when I get to Bergen.
You didn't have to go through customs and everything in Oslo? No, no.
Nope, because just I guess connect. Because I did it in Copenhagen, I didn't need to.
You're within Scandinavia, it's kind of open.
So now I see the real ones. They're in Oslo going to Bergen as well. So I'm chatting with them and I'm just sort of describing my journey. And I'm like, okay, well, I guess when I get to Bergen, I'll have to really skrupu a shaman, you know? And they're like, no, there's no one in Bergen. There's no one there. I was like, oh, so I guess I made it. And he's like, yeah. And meanwhile, I'm texting the whole band. I'm giving them updates as I'm doing my journey. And Sandra's just like, so you're in? I'm like, I think I'm in. And everyone's like, did you make it? I'm like, I guess I made it. I'm here. Like, we still didn't know. Like, I'm literally in Bergen. I see Sandre at the Bergen baggage claim. He's on the other side of the room and he's just looking at me. He's like, are you here? I'm like, I'm here. And we're like, okay, I guess this is real. So it was just, we took a risk. It turned out great. And And in a way, we were sort of annoyed that there was all this fiasco surrounding the trip. And we could have planned it like normal people and bought tickets ahead of time instead of a shotgun flight.
Yeah.
But
you didn't know.
Then we didn't know. And then later that day, Sandra gets a call. It's like, hey, guess what? Sigdi, who's a very famous artist, had a Grammy Award winning songwriter from America fly into Oslo to do some co-writing on some songs with her. And the border said, you have to go back to America.
Oh. Wow. At the, roughly the same time? Or
literally the same day I got there. So she took a flight going directly to Oslo. I connected in Copenhagen.
Yeah.
And that wasn't strategy. That was just dumb luck. Yeah. So she came the same day I did. They made her go to the airport hotel and take the very next flight the next morning. They wouldn't even let her talk to Sigrid's management.
Is it true?
They're like, no, you can't talk to anyone. Like they put her in the hotel airport and she had to get on the flight back the next morning. So then when we heard that, we were like, man, that sucks for Sigrid and that songwriter. And as bummed as we are for them, it also sort of at least made us feel better about the fact that we were worried about it because it is a real threat.
Absolutely. You know? So maybe we can take thank the Danish, actually, that are pretty chill. So what are you doing?
I'm
playing some shows. Okay, have fun with that. Okay, you're going to Norway. Okay, it's not our problem.
Right? In a way, I wonder if he's just like, well, it's not our problem. Yeah, he might have thought that.
I don't know. So, but that just is an example of that people don't really have a clue about rules and stuff in this situation. It's a little bit probably from case to case what they do and how they interpret it, you know, the situation.
Exactly. And luckily, Petar, Sandre's cousin, he sent us that European Commission's COVID sort of guideline booklet. And we saw very clearly there that I had the right to come in, you know? Yeah. And so we're just lucky that he reached out and sent us that, because who knows if we would have taken the risk.
Yeah.
Because that gave us some faith.
Wow. But now you're here or there in Bergen. 7 weeks.
And I have to do a 10-day quarantine. So I'm just in Sandre's apartment while he's in Oslo. Yeah. I'm in his apartment by myself. And, you know,
Time on their hands.
We're very respectful of the guidelines here. So I don't leave. I walk a mountain every day, but I just do it distantly away from everyone else. Yeah. And,
but is there a possibility to, I knew some people coming from abroad, and is there a possibility to take a test and wait for the result?
There is, there is, but the deal, we called them when I arrived, and we thought that if you take the test and it's negative, you're free to go. But the rule is you have to do a 10-day quarantine regardless of the test result. And that actually makes sense, because this thing supposedly has an incubation period of at the most 8 days. So if I took a test and it said I was fine, that doesn't necessarily mean I am. No. You know,
could change.
So the quarantine makes sense.
Okay, but how is Bergen right now? The sun is shining here. How is Bergen today?
Well, you know, it's Bergen. It's rainy.
It's raining.
It's been raining every day. And just yesterday I went up Løvstakken, which is one of the famous hills here.
That's a great one.
And it was like rainy, like normal. I'm used to the normal rainy vibe, but then it started pouring as soon as I got up there. I was just soaking wet.
Inside a cloud or
I guess. And then as soon as I came down from the mountain, it was fine again. So it was just really just
That's just Bergen saying welcome back, Dave. Here's some rainy love.
And that's what I love about this place. They don't say, oh, it's a rainy day. No. Like, no one says that here. They just say, it's a day. Yeah. It's a day in Bergen, you know? So you sort of get over that pretty quick, the rain, because it's not a rainy day. It's just a normal day.
Yeah, it's normal.
You know?
Yeah, I know. But, okay, so how many more days? You came Saturday? So you have another week or so.
Yeah. And so Sandre will eventually come back here. So then the question was, well, where do I go? And Chris, our bass player, Chris Holm, who's just an incredible musician, as is Alexander Von Mav, a keyboard player.
Yes, the band, yeah.
Yeah, great musicians, great friends, great people. So Chris has a cabin in Oskoy.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to go move into that cabin when Sandra comes back, and I'll just be alone in nature, and it's going to be beautiful.
That's going to be great. So, and there's...
And, Malius, my friend Saher, who lives here in Bergen, I had her pick me up a pair of, like, Gore-Tex Nike Pegasus sneakers.
Running shoes?
So I've got these great, like, you know, they're good in the rain kind of running sneakers. So I've got these brand new sneakers waiting for me here. She just dropped them off for me. And I can use these in Oskoy and go running in the woods.
Yes, maybe if you have the time when you get here, I'll take you running into the trails around Oslo.
Yeah,
yeah, we'll go into the Lillomarka maybe. I can show you if you have the time, you and Sandra. But
do you ever use these, the Nike Trail Pegasus?
No, I haven't. I haven't tried them. No.
They're really nice, man.
I'm running only with Ultra shoes.
Yeah,
they're my brand.
Sponsored. Yeah.
I'm sponsored. Yeah, I'm sponsored, but I was running before I was sponsored with them also. So I reached out to them. It's not the other way around.
Right, good. Yeah. That's not, always.
But anyway, the Nike Pegasus are probably also good as long as they have some good soles. Is that what you say? Soles? Soles.
Yep.
Not the soul, not the psyche, but the soul of the shoe. Yeah.
And have you tried those in Gingy socks? Have you tried those?
Oh, yes, absolutely. That's a fun story there, because I still use the Gingy socks that you gave me.
Yeah, they last forever. I still have mine.
Except for the big toe. The big toe has enormous holes.
So you need more then, right? You need some more?
Oh, absolutely. I would. And Gingy is also imported by the same company, Imports Ultra. So I'm having this competition going on where the third spot of running a segment that I call the Captari Championship 2020 is going to win in Gingy socks. But the fun thing
is great.
Yeah, this is a little story we'll do. It's about running. I can't remember. Yes, I was going to Bergen to run a half marathon, and I don't know how we talked about it, but we talked about in Gingy socks, maybe Sandra said, and you knew this woman that worked for in Gingy, so you said, yeah, I can get you some socks and stuff, and you returned with a bunch, hats and everything.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is the founding member of, you know, owner of the company is my ex-girlfriend.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Wow.
So,
I love them. Always run with them.
Yeah, she's been sending me socks for years, and they're just truly the best. And I don't say this just because she's my ex-girlfriend. I mean, like, they're just the great. I've never had a blister ever since I started using
their socks. Same here, yeah. No, I absolutely need it, because when I get warm in my feet and I don't have the separation of the toes, for people who know in Gingy, I'm going to get, you know, blisters. And the same
goes for
something.
Yeah, I guess we should say that. That's what makes these socks special, is that they have the toes separated. Yeah.
They're a little hard to put on sometimes.
Yeah.
You're going to take a few extra minutes, but when they're on, they're like, they're the best.
Yeah, so, and that's the point, is like having those toes separated little sockets is great, because they lock it onto your foot and it won't move, and that's how you get blisters, is the sweat combined with friction.
Absolutely.
So when you have your toes securely in these socks, there's no friction, they don't move around. And they also last forever, man. Like you said, you've been using that same pair.
This is 4 years now or something, I think.
Yeah. And I have a box full of brand new socks I haven't even been able to crack into yet, because I still keep they last for, and we tour with them. I got Sandre hooked on them, and we use these things all the time, all over the place.
Yeah.
And a little trick, and I'm sure you do this, Marius. Sandre does not do this. And I know that because I just did his laundry while he's away.
Okay.
And so when you take the socks off, he just takes them off, which puts the toes inside out. That's a pain in the butt. You got to take each toe off first. So I don't know
but
why.
Sondre's just like, Sondre's always running so hard. Every training session, he probably comes home and he doesn't. He just,
Exactly. You know? he's always got a million things to do. So he's probably just the last thing he's thinking about.
But we know Sondre is a runner. He's been on the podcast. How is your relationship with running? You're on the Strava. You like post things on Strava, but you never give them the tour a name or the file a name or anything. Yeah. So you don't seem to care. But I see you do some running.
I'm the worst Strava user ever. I don't really use it the way that you and Sondre use and Mali use. We have another friend who plays Cold music. Modus. He's a drummer and guitar. Yeah, have you ran with him?
I have once, I think. We did the steep hill here, Oslo's bratteste. He's called Marius. What's his last name again?
He goes sometimes by like Meb 4, I think. On Strava. At least that's his Instagram name. But he plays drums with Aurora sometimes. Yeah. He'll fill in if Magnus can't do it. But yeah, he's a great runner. His full name is Marius Österbergesson.
Yeah.
Marius Österbergesson.
Marius Österbergesson, stämmer.
Yeah. Mm. And he's a great dude, and he's always on Strava, and so are you and Salma. Mm. And really, I just use it, basically, I use it to see how fast and how far my run is. Yeah. And then I always do the same route. So once I've done it like once, then I already know it and I typically don't use it again. Every now and again, I'll put it on just to see what my time is like. Yeah, but yeah. Once I know how far the route is and generally how long I go, I just...
So you don't record everything on there?
No.
No, okay,
no
okay.
I don't.
So what is your relationship with running? I know you run, but I don't know how you train or if you do any training or if you run just for the fun of it or if you have any goals or how is your relationship?
Well, the funny thing is I started in about 2007.
Yeah.
I started running. And I think it was because I was going to be 30 and I was like, I was in my late 20s and I was like, well, I've never been like, I've always looked the same. It wasn't like a way of looking. It was just like a way of sort of not feeling old, Yeah. So I just wanted to like be very active all the time. And so my bass player, Pat Doherty, in the band I was touring with at the time, he would have these like he drank a lot. Mm. I was never really a big drinker, but he would drink a lot, and then the next morning I'd wake up and he was just in the parking lot of the Motel 6 just doing laps.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, all right man, so it's bizarre because you run but you also just get like hammered late at night. And he's like, yeah, I like to punish myself the next morning if I've had like a night of drinking. And so then I was like, all right, well, I'll join you. And so then he got me into running, really. And then I sort of, once I felt the way it felt, right? Mm. Once you get that high, you're like, oh man, I want to do this all the time. So then I got really into it and I developed sort of like this body workout routine that I could do. So I would always like run and do like body weight training in the hotel room.
Okay. So using your own body weight, like calisthenics, yeah. Is that what it's called?
Exactly.
Or, yep. You always struck me as a very fit person, very healthy. Did you influence Sondre a little bit with your regime?
Well, that's kind of the funny part is that, when we first met, he wasn't doing any sort of working out. And, he'll tell you that he would watch people running a marathon and just go like, wow, I don't want anything to do with that. Like, that is the last thing I want to be doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was always so happy to not be the guy running. And I just, I just tried to get him on to just sit-ups and push-ups. And I'd be like, let's just do crunches and push-ups together. And he had this thing with his back where his spine would stick out a little bit by his tailbone and he'd always wind up getting like cuts.
Oh yeah.
When he tried doing sit-ups.
Oh yeah.
And I was just like, well, that would happen to me too if I didn't have like a towel or something on the ground. So that's an easy fix. So just use a pillow or a towel. So we would, he didn't enjoy it though yet, right? But he would do it.
Yeah.
And then, so then we started kind of working on just sit-ups and push-ups, and then running. He started to join me on the running, and he had a knee issue, which was really bad. I remember feeling so bad one time. We were touring in Germany, and we ran through this really beautiful park in Berlin, and it was like a rainy day, and we're running, and I, you know, was sort of trying to coach him to keep going, and he was in a lot of pain, and I felt bad about that, because then when we got back to the tour bus, his knee was like jacked up.
And that
would hurt him for like a day or two after the run. So, you know, I had to be kind of mindful of the fact that he did have this sort of knee issue, and he really started to enjoy running, and then the whole band would go running, and, you know, we toured Europe and started sort of like a running club with everybody.
You did an insanely long tour in 2017, wasn't it? Whole of Norway and Europe.
But this, what I'm talking about here is when we went with Young Dreams, which was like
way back.
God, I want to say it was like 2012 or something that.
Yeah.
So then he started really trying to figure out this knee issue, and he started seeing some physical therapists and stuff, and then it got better. And then he started to really just enjoy running, and we would go on like very serious runs. And then he was into long distance. He got into like long distance running, which I never have really been a fan of. I've done a half marathon, but I'm much more into like going fast and sort of shorter distances.
Yeah. But you treat running as a good, like, pretty hard workout, or do you do any slow running also? I see your times on Strava are insane.
I like to do intervals a lot, and I like to just run my fastest 5K that I can every day. So that's been my thing. So, because I was always like, the longer you go, when I was training for the half marathon, as you know, Marius, it just takes up a lot of time to keep adding on those miles. It's just a lot of time out of your day, which is cool, but there's a lot of things I want to do, and I get the same, well, I shouldn't say same, I get a better feeling out of running like a really fast 5K than I do running like a slower, like 10 miles something.
But do you do that do you run a 5K every day?
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of been my thing. It's like 5K a day plus calisthenics.
Yeah.
So I have like this, it's called Lotto. It's a Lotto routine that I worked on with some other musician friends of mine, Pat Doherty, the bass player I mentioned earlier, Jeff Taylor. We would sort of toss around these different workouts and like, you know, email them to each other and make little videos of what we're doing. Then I sort of find a routine and put things together, and you're like, this one works really well. And it's about 45 minutes. And so I would do what's called Lotto routine, and then go for a run, and then that's it. So the whole thing, you know, after stretching, because that's very important, you know, it's about 2 hours out of your day. And then now I've cut it down to the Lotto routine. I do half as long, so I can just get a little more time to do other things. So now I'm doing like, I do a 7-minute ab thing. I do 150 push-ups in under 5 minutes every morning.
150 in one go.
Yeah. So it's just got to be like under 5 minutes. So it doesn't matter how you group it. If you take a couple seconds break, but you just have to do 150 in under 5 minutes.
I've been working a little bit on the push-ups. I'm really weak in that part of the body.
That's the problem with running, right?
That's
why I've always wanted to like maintain sort of a good balance. And, and so the more you run, the more fat you burn, and like the harder it is to sort of keep up with your calories. Cause by the time you're done running, I mean, you're not even eating enough.
No.
You know what I mean? It's like, it's tough. It's work. Like just getting that, the right amount of calories. Cause I did a triathlon, and when I was training for that, I was like, okay, all this is great, but I don't have time to eat. And I'm like, you know, you're just like losing so much weight because you just can't eat enough to keep up.
Yeah.
I understand that problem, and that's why I sort of tapered back my running and sort of built up more. Now I'll tell you what really changed my body chemistry in that way, because I couldn't put on. I've been 145 pounds my like entire life. I just can't.
Yeah, how many kilos seem is that
to put on more? Let's see. I don't know.
No, I usually split it in half, but I know that isn't exactly right either.
No, it's not. So it's like 65 kilograms.
Yeah, it's just above me, a little bit above me. Yeah,
and you're super tall.
I'm 185. Yeah, so I'm
5'9", which yeah, let's I'm see about, what that would be in centimeters.
I'm about 6 foot. About you're 182, 181, 182.
I'm 175 centimeters. Right?
You're 175.
Oh
okay.
No! That's not right.
No, nope. It can't be right. You're taller than that.
That can't be right.
But anyways, yeah, you're pretty.
I'm 180. I'm 180 centimeters.
Yeah, that's what I reckon. You're pretty lean, to put it.
Yeah. So I'm just like, how do I? And I've wanted to put on at least like 5 more pounds of muscle, and I just, no matter what I do, I can't seem to do it. I'm always running. I'm always working out, but I just, and then during quarantine in America, when it happened in March, I had gotten a pull-up bar as a present. Mm-hmm. So I started using the pull-up bar, and that really made a difference.
Okay.
Because all of the body calisthenics stuff, you can only really do a push action. Mm-hmm. You know, so you're doing push-ups, you're pushing your weight. Mm-hmm. But to pull your weight up, mm-hmm. for some reason, that made all the difference, man. I love resistance bands. I do a lot of Pilates-based moves, mm-hmm. using resistance bands. But the pull-up bar, I'm telling you, if anyone who's looking to sort of change things up or just add some more muscle, get a pull-up bar. You just put it in your doorway jam. It's super simple.
I have one of those that doesn't fit in any of my door because I have these walls. Yeah, I have to. I should just tweak it somehow. But what I do right now, to just put it very short, is I have this round that I run about 8.5 kilometers, and either in the beginning or the end, it's two places. There's this parallel bars, this park, you know. So I can do both a push-up and I can do a pull-up, which isn't the normal pull-up, but I do the Australian pull-up, which is lying down and then pulling my body, because I'm not strong enough right now to pull my whole body weight. But I'm trying to get there by just, you know, working on that part. And I can feel that. That really helps with my chest and shoulders and stuff. So I'm going to put that in and become a little better at it, actually.
That's good. But you really got to figure out the pull-up bar situation, because you can change your grip to go wider or narrower. Yeah, and you can change it so that your palms are facing you or your palms are away from you. Yeah. And all those different things, they really hit different muscles.
They do.
And I love like anything that you can sort of measure, because that famous saying, like, you know, you can only manage what you can measure, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So pull-ups are great because you can actually measure how many you're doing in how much time. So, you know, then my goal was, well, I want to do 100 pull-ups every day, and I want to be able to do it in like 10 minutes. And I can't remember what I was, I think I was doing it in like 12 or 13 minutes. Mm-hmm. But so, you know, it's just a great exercise, man. So you can just start adding. So I can do 10 pull-ups today. Awesome. Yep. By next week, you're doing 15, you know, and then before you know it, you're doing 100 pull-ups a day. And it's just, it really helps. And I think that'd be great for you.
I think I have to work on it, because I see I'm going to become a better runner. There's not a possibility for me to put in more, as you talk about, more time running.
Yeah,
it's tough enough as it is. I run about everything from 50 up to 80 a week, depending on the period. Man. And that's as a father of two and blah blah blah.
Only just a father of two. This needs to be said. Yeah. You're also a loving partner, right?
Yeah.
So you're a partner. and
yeah.
And you actually work at that. I know you, and I know that it's not a passive experience for you. You put in the work to be a loving partner, and you also put in a whole lot of work into being a fantastic dad. So you're not, you know, you're actively engaged in those things. So it's, you know, I could say I'm a dad to a dog, right? I'm a doggy dad, but I don't actually have to do anything to be that, you know.
You have
but
to take
I do.
Care of
I love him.
A little
him.
Bit,
I try to give him the best life I can, and I do make time to spend with him, and I dedicate certain parts of my day to just having a connection with him, and I do try to respect his sentient presence in the world. But I mean, that's different than us having human children. And you're such a great dad, and you're a great partner, and you know, so just time is valuable to everybody.
It
everyone
is, it is. It's,
who's listening to this,
yeah,
time is the most important resource any of us have.
Absolutely.
So
and it
that's
seems,
why.
Yeah, seems to be more important for every year I live.
Absolutely. Because you sort of see
that remember,
finish line.
Yeah, I can't remember which Stoic said it, but said something like, it's not that we have too little time, it's that we waste so much of it, you know.
Yes.
in life we don't have little time in life. Life is long, kind of. We have enough time, but
it
we
is,
just
right.
waste so much of it. And I'm becoming more reflective on these words as I age, how I use my time.
And I'm glad to hear you say that, because anytime someone would say, hey, life is short, man, I'm always like, it's not really.
No, it's not really that short. It's actually pretty long.
I would say, I would say, like, right now I'm 42.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I look back at the 42 years of life I've lived, and really I only remember, like, probably, you know, 36 of those years, right?
Yeah.
So I have another 42 to go.
Yeah.
And I probably still have another 10 after that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
If you keep
so when
living
I look at my
like
life
this,
right now, yeah. everything I've done, I have to do all of that over again.
Mm.
That's how much time I have.
Yeah.
It's a lot of time.
It's a lot of time. Many days.
And so what you're saying is great. It's like, yeah, you've got time. It's just, how are you using it?
Yeah.
You know, and it's that other weird thing. I'm sure you've run into this, where it's like the more things you have to do that day, the more you get done.
Yeah.
You know,
it's
whereas
the focus.
If you have,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's like, I've got Sunday completely free. Mm. I'm going to do so much stuff, and you do like nothing with it. Right.
Nothing.
But when you got to pick up the kids from school, you got to drop them off in the morning, you got to pick them up later. You know, you manage so much stuff.
Yeah.
When you have things to do. So it's time management, man. That is key. And that's why when developing my workout sort of philosophy or whatever, I realized, okay, how can I maximize the most amount of like fun, energy burning in the least amount of time so that I can dedicate that other time to other things, but still taking it very seriously because our health is our priority. So you never want to put that on the back burner. So always make that the focus, but what can I do in a short amount of time that's giving me the most result? And for me, it's like having that 20 minutes of cardio, pumping it out hard, doing some strength, some mobility and flexibility. I think that's not enough. There's not enough focus on that is the flexibility and mobility exercises.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll just take a break from the like rigorous calisthenics routine and just spend a week working on like lengthening my spine and all that, and just like have a yoga week. You know?
That's great. I think yoga is a good thing, or exercise that looks like yoga. It could be Pilates also.
Yeah, I love it.
But definitely we forget a little bit about the core and the spine and things, which are really important to be, as you say, flexible.
Yeah.
Also for runners, because I see in myself and others that if you become less flexible, you become slower. So it doesn't only help to run fast. You have to work on the whole flexibility.
Yeah.
And I can, you know, running
is...
And on
that tip, actually, I want to get back to Sandre on that, because he's always hated stretching. He's always hated stretching. And now I see, and the funny thing is, like, he sort of took running and just totally... took it to another level. I'm watching him, you know, I was there for his first marathon in New York City, just cheering him on.
Yeah.
And it was so funny to be like, man, I remember when I couldn't get him to do a sit up.
Yeah.
And now here I am cheering him on at this marathon. And he's not only doing it, he's killing it. He's like competitively.
Yeah.
He's not just doing it. He's crushing it.
And it's
just so wonderful to see. But the stretching thing, I still don't think I've gotten him to enjoy that.
No.
That's the last thing I think I'll get Sandre to get into. But he had a trainer who he loved for this reason, who I despised for this reason, because I've never even met him. And I don't think Sandre's seen him much since this. But the guy told him, you don't really need to stretch.
He said so. Yeah.
And of course, Sandre was like really happy to hear that.
I'm
sitting here like fuming, like, who is this guy? And listen what the guy said. The guy told him, you don't see horses stretching after a race, do you?
That was
literally,
his,
this is what this guy said.
Yeah.
And he thinks that makes sense. I'm like, no, because horses aren't smart enough to be able to do that. They don't have the ability. If horses knew how much faster they could go and how much longer their running career would be if they had a good stretching routine. Of course, they, what idiot says that?
You don't see
horses stretching after.
You see cats and I guess some dogs too stretching. You know, when a cat gets out, you see him stretching his back. And one of the yoga things that I try to do is to stretch when you're all four, down on your knees and your hands, you can stretch your back up and down. And that gives you a kind of,
any equestrian, you know, knows this, that after you ride a horse, you walk the horse around in circles to let the lactic acid come out and you sort of calm them down. So so that's their stretching. I mean, they're still, you're walking them around to get them to relax, get their muscles to relax. I mean, they do have their own form of stretching, but it was just so dumb. But anyway, but Sandre, I actually don't know what his stretching looks like now. I'm sure it's very minimal, but now he's going to hear this and we'll talk about it. Yeah. I'm sure.
He has a standing invitation to come here, so I'll ask him about it. He just did a marathon. Yeah. That was an amazing time. So
yeah, we he's doing something about right. That. But, I mean, now he just did a marathon on
at sub 3.
What was his time?
2:55, I think. Yeah.
Right. Yes.
Very good.
And so he did it under, you know, and that's on top of everything else he's doing. Yeah. I mean, you know, this guy, he just had them look. He's the only one. This pandemic 2020, he's the busiest guy in the world.
Yes, he is.
Possibly the busiest guy in the world. That might not even be hyperbole. He might just be the busiest guy in the world.
He's jumped on every chance that was possible. He's done really well. And I love it that you're going to tour now with a band.
Yeah.
You're coming to Oslo at the end of the month. I think you said 27th of... Yeah, where are you playing here? In Oslo?
Oh, geez, that's a good question. I think Rockefeller. Yeah, Rockefeller.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's probably a limit to the amount of people, I guess.
It is. It's socially distanced. You know, I mean, Norway is great with that. Like, they're only going to do things if it makes sense.
Yeah.
And we're definitely trying to make it safe for everybody. And we're just excited to be a band together again. And I've been missing Sandre and the band so much. I haven't seen him since January. So here we are in November. We haven't played together or even been in each other's presence since January. Mm. So it just, the ability, well, I have to say, like, the risk Sandre was willing to take to just get me into the country, I'm sure for him it didn't feel like a big deal, but to me it's a big deal, and I'm really appreciative of the fact that, you know, the bond that we all have together as a band, that we'll do anything it takes to be together, and I know that comes through in the music when we perform, because we really do love each other, and it is you know, we're family,
you're a great live band. He really figured out the setting there. And you've been playing with Sondre since about 2012 or so?
Well, before, 2009, we 2009, first met actually. At Rockefeller in Oslo. You might have been there. Were you there?
I wasn't there, but, Regina? Yeah, no, but my wife was there, Tala. You know,
that's when I first met her.
Yeah, you were all backstage with Regina Spektor, and you met all of you. Yeah. So quite a while.
This then, and then 2010, we recorded his self-titled album in 2010. And then it's been ever since. Yeah. So we've been, for over a decade, we've been together.
His last album, by the way, or his or yours, but the last album that he's been recording like for 7 years, so we've been doing back and forth, that's really an amazing album, the Patience album.
Yeah. Thank you. Well,
that is an amazing album.
It really showcases Sandre's just incredible songwriting.
Yes, absolutely.
It's so good.
Yeah. So it will be great to see you perform that live. Really looking forward to that. And
we are too, because we haven't had a chance to do that yet. So
you're going to do some rehearsing, I guess, on beforehand when you get out of quarantine and do a little bit rehearsing, or how is that? How do you work
up to? So when quarantine's done, we're going to have 2 days in Bergen where we just get to workshop all this material and develop a show. And then we're going to start touring it. So we go to Aalesund and we play a couple of shows there. We play a couple in Bergen. We play a couple in Oslo. We're also going to do some live stream concert stuff. Mm-hmm. I believe there's one in Oslo on December 16th that we're doing. We're also going to do some recording. We're working on some new material.
Great.
And it's going to be great.
That's going to be amazing. So you're and then you're going back for Christmas to the US, or?
Yeah, exactly. So I'm here for 7 weeks. I'll go back home for Christmas, and then we'll see what 2021 brings.
Yeah.
You know, I don't even know what's going on with America, because we got the election.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. Today is Wednesday. We still haven't got a result, as I checked a few hours ago, because we're waiting for some states. But of course, Donald Trump went out and said, it's a fraud. It's a fraud. They're trying to steal the election. Don't listen to them.
Oh, man.
But we knew he was going to do that. Everybody knew. So
that's his move. He tells you something, whether it's true or not, and just expects it to be real. Of course he does. But the reality is, I mean, even if these were two presidential candidates that we all liked, this outcome is very close. Mm. And to be truthful, it's not looking very good, because they have to win the Electoral College. Like, they need 270 to win, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So only three times in the history of the country has there been a case where they didn't win by that margin.
Okay.
And when that happens, then the Congress decides who's president.
Mm.
And that could be very bad.
It can be very bad. There's going to be, as long as it's taking time, it's going to be bad, because they're going to try to spin a narrative of the things have been done wrong. And Trump wants to stop the counting of the postal votes and stuff like this, even though that's totally normal that they count all the votes. They usually do that. I just heard a podcast on normal elections. If there's votes from, soldiers abroad, or Europeans, Americans living in Europe or Asia, wherever, they wait for them all. They probably don't have anything to say, because there's so few. But now it's a difference. 100 million people voted pre-election day. So we have a totally different situation. And I don't know if they're ready to handle it. I'm not sure. We don't know.
Yeah, it's the problem is there's no respect on the Trump side. So like, they're not thinking the way you're thinking. They're not thinking, well, it's only fair if we XYZ. Mm. He's just thinking, what's going to prohibit me from victory? And that's the thing he's gonna fight against. And it's bad.
How has it been to live in you live in New Jersey, right, which is right across the river from Manhattan?
So New
Jersey, it's a known state, it's a known town, but it's very close to New York City. You can go over there in how long would you use to go over to Manhattan?
I live in Jersey City, and Jersey as you City. Said it's literally the other side of the river. So the Hudson River separates New Jersey from New York. So Manhattan being an island, I just have to cross that river to get into Manhattan. And then it's a very simple little cross to get to Brooklyn. Mm. So when Sandre was living in Brooklyn and I was in Jersey City, I could be at his house, door to door in 45 minutes if I took a train. If I drove, I could be there in 20 minutes. Mm. So that's how close I am. I mean, it's literally like 3 miles. I'm 3 miles away.
Yeah,
from
you could run. You could run, actually.
Yeah, you could, but run over. Then you have to go up the George Washington Bridge, and then you wind up in uptown.
How has it been in these last 6-7 months? You're a drummer. You play with Sondre, but you also do other stuff. You have your own band. You play with other musicians as well, or
So basically, in Jersey City, that's a very it's a great, beautiful city, but there's a lot of people there. So when the pandemic hit in March, when we knew it was serious, my girlfriend and I got really lucky, because her aunt has a very beautiful vacation home in the Berkshires of Massachusetts, which is basically this very popular relaxation and getaway area where it's up in the woods. We didn't have anyone around for miles. It was just, you walk out the door and you're looking at the beautiful you know, mountains, and it was just really, it's where Herman Melville like hiked before he wrote Moby Dick.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Him and Nathaniel Hawthorne used to walk in these mountains, and it's just beautiful. So we brought the dog up there. We had a whole house to ourselves, and we usually live in a small studio apartment, me, her, and the dog. So now we had a 4-story house, had a sauna in there, had a pool. It felt like a celebrity rehab, like a place that celebrities go to get sober. And it was just like really beautiful. And so we stayed up there for 3 months. And so that was just idyllic and fantastic. And then we got back to Jersey City and we were worried about it, but actually everyone was very good about wearing masks and keeping their distance. So we felt really safe there, and it's, everyone is still really good about it there. People are mindful, and, you know, so it's pretty good there. I think when it happened in March, it was very, very bad. I mean, trying to get to the grocery store, it was really rough. So now things are better as it's calmed down.
Are you able to do what you usually do, or?
Oh, well, when we went up to the Berkshires, you know, I brought a little traveling drum kit, and I was able to teach drum lessons online there, and also do some recording. So Fancy Colors, which is my other band that you mentioned, with my friend Zach, he would send me some stuff, and then I'd use my iPhone to record the drum part. So I'd set up like 3 different iPhones, one in the bass drum, one by the hi-hat, and sort of, and then he would mix those together to get a good sound. So we have some music coming out that we recorded that way. It's not ideal, but, you know,
it's
what everyone's doing. And then Sondre had this beautiful concert in Bergen in Håkonshallen. And I couldn't be there, of course. So I recorded myself again with the iPhone on this tiny little traveling drum kit, and they used that footage to splice me into this beautiful old King's banquet hall from like the year 1300 or something.
That's amazing.
And and I was able to be there and play with them through that. And then there was another thing called, this other New York musician I know, he organized like a group of musicians, like a collective of people from all over the country. And he did a lot of work in this. So every week for 8 weeks, he would assign a band. It was like a virtual band. He would put a drummer, guitar player, bass player, sax, vocalist, whatever it is. He would just create a random band. And then on Monday, the drummer would record the drum part. On Tuesday, the bass player would put down some bass. Wednesday would be guitar. Thursday's vocals, Friday, you know, whatever. So by Saturday, you had a song. And we would create, and we would like record ourselves doing it and put these little video compilations together. So through that, that was just kind of more fun stuff. But it was, you know, every week I was in a band with complete strangers, and we'd make a new song together. Sometimes you're the guy that starts it off. So I would be able to create a beat, and then everyone else would layer onto that. Sometimes I'm the last guy to add my part. You never know where you're going to be in the process. And that was really cool. And it was so successful. I was surprised to see how it all came together. So we would all just share this new music. And I never, through those whole 8 weeks, I've never played with the same guy twice. It was someone new. Wow. That I didn't know all the time.
That's so amazing. Kind of, yeah. So even through this, creative people learn how to, you know, make art in new ways. You know, when we're, limited at some point, meeting and doing it physically, there's technology now that makes it so much simpler to collaborate over.
Yeah. And sometimes you'll be like, whoa, this track came out really good. Yeah. I actually like this. And sometimes you're like, well, how do we make this sound good? I don't know. But
it's a little much.
But that's the challenge. And it's people you don't know. So you also don't know how sensitive they are. Is this someone who I can say, hey, man, do you mind re-recording that bass part? Because it's not really locked in. So I can't put my part down. Do you mind redoing it? Or is it someone who's very, you know, who wouldn't be open to that? These are all strangers. You don't know. You know?
Yeah.
And so, and but we would, we wound up making friends. And like some of these guys I kept in touch with because I really liked what they did, and we, they really were nice people. And so I made a couple friends through that process as well.
Great, great.
So it was really, you know, it's great. And a lot of them know Sandre's music, and they really loved, you know, they love him.
I guess you're, when you, you could say that you're kind of freelance drummer, so people could hire you to do studio work or go on tour with them. And I guess it's important to be known as a musician that can be collaborated with. And is this something you, you see yourself doing in, you know, in the foreseeable future?
Well, it's, that's like a, it's an interesting topic because, like, I didn't grow up wanting to be a freelance musician, right? I grew up wanting to make music with people I cared about. I never get turned on with like someone calling me to come in and play on a, you know, I barely know them and they want me to play drums on their track. And, you know, and that can be fun. Like, but drums was never the thing that got me excited. It was like making music with people. So when I first started my band in middle school with my friends, you know, we would just, you know, I was 13 years old playing a rock club in Newark, New Jersey. And it just like, and I looked like I was nine because I was a very like young looking kid. So
you still are.
It was, thank you. But, you know, these old seasoned guys in rock bands are like, man, how fucking old are you, man? And I'm like, I was like 13. They're like, what the hell? We were playing Black Sabbath covers and Led Zeppelin covers. And, you know, we also wrote original music. But I loved that, like meeting up to rehearse with my friends and creating music. And
you did, you know, drums always, all the time since the beginning?
Yeah, I was always a drummer because I heard John Bonham, you know, Led Zeppelin. I was God. Wow, it just moved me. Like,
he's a legend.
That was my first inspiration.
If people listening to this haven't heard Led Zeppelin, they should just immediately listen. I was crazy about Led Zeppelin when I was in the end of my, from I was about 16, 17, discovered Led Zeppelin.
Exactly. I was obsessed. And that's the thing, like Led Zeppelin is something you get obsessed with.
Yeah, you do.
You tend to only listen to them. You never listen to anything else.
Yeah.
And of course you branch. And then I heard The Police and I got into that. And, you know, but, you know, so I've always loved drumming and the drums, but I loved making music with people through that. And so that's my, been my focus is like, who do I connect with? Who do I feel like, you know, that, that the chemistry between us can bring out something better than if we weren't together. And I've always felt like if I'm not adding to it, then I'm taking away from it. So if someone ever called me, sometimes they'd be like, hey man, what do you think? Do you want to play drums on this thing or something? And sometimes I'd be like, you know what? I don't think it needs anything. You know, I don't think you need me on that. And if I'm not bringing something new to the table, then I'm just taking away from it. So sometimes I'll just take myself out of a situation when someone's trying to bring me in, you know, and that's kind of counterintuitive if you're looking to make money as a freelance musician. But I guess I don't, I'm okay with like not having money because it's like, you know, it's just not the end of the world to me.
But you have to, of course, earn some basic income so you can.
I mean, but it's like, how do you want to earn? You need money, but how do you want to make that money? Do I want to play wedding gigs? I don't.
No.
You know, like I don't want to play weddings unless they're my friends. And I've done that. I've been hired to play weddings, you know, for my friends in bands of people that I'm friends with that I enjoy. But like a freelance musician who's like making a lot of money, he's out there doing wedding gigs. He's doing all that stuff. And good for him. And that's cool. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just that I that doesn't make me happy. So I've always been more into the sort of intimate connection and because I think you're only going to make something good if you have that chemistry. I just don't see it working any other way. I can play drums, but I want to play music. And to me, music is more than it's like something you can't practice. It's just something that comes together when the right people are working together. So I have a few people in my life that I feel that with, that I connect with, and I try to just keep nurturing those relationships, because I'd rather, you know, like Neil Young's Crazy Horse, right? Like Neil Young's band that's been together forever. I've always felt like if we could keep that energy and connection and love for each other together, the Sandra Lerche band could continue forever.
Yeah,
you know, but as you know, being a husband, right? I mean, it's like you need to keep nurturing that relationship. You just can't expect it to be there.
Nope.
So I rather put in the work of like saying, well, how can I sort of challenge myself to think about music differently, so that when I'm in a room with Sandre and Chris and Alexander and we're working on some new material, I can be bringing a fresh perspective. So what's going to be the thing that gets me to that fresh perspective to keep nurturing the relationships that I already love and have? It's not going to be going to play a wedding. It's not going to go be playing drums on some, you know, songwriter's album that I've never met. It's going to be me like probably listening to some other music, taking that time and like listening to some other things that are interesting to me, or playing some Brazilian stuff with some friends, like just for fun or whatever. Like, you know, I just think the goal is to keep nurturing the relationships I have because I love that. So anything that happens outside of that needs to somehow elevate the situations that I'm in. So I try to only do things that will elevate myself so that I can bring a fresh perspective to these groups that I play with, like Fancy Colors and Sandra. And, you know, I just, so yeah, I am a freelancer, but I tend to only take things that I feel will actually bring me to a higher level.
And that happens with Sandra and Alexander and Chris. It seems to me like you really found, the four of you, a really good vibe, put together that band that's been playing for quite a while. And it's great that you're here now and you can play together, and really looking forward to that.
Yeah, we've been a band for 10 years. And how do you keep everyone interested, right? Like that's the thing. Like, you've been playing together for 10 years. I mean, you can't just keep doing the same stuff, right? You gotta like keep developing,
evolving,
and it's
Sandra,
so
really he's evolved, and you all have, I guess, but listening to the three last albums, that's kind of a trilogy,
right?
It's amazing because they all are so good, but they keep on getting better, and with this last one it was like another level coming. So yeah, I'm looking forward to talking to Sondre a little bit more about music, because he's been here before. We talked about a lot of running and stuff, and but I'm definitely gonna do a music thing with him, because he wrote that book, Alle sanger handler om deg, and I read that, and that's so good because he goes so into the, you know,
And that's the thing that's special about Sandre, because a lot of songwriters wouldn't take the time to nurture that kind of relationship the way he has. So he sees the value in having a family around you to create with. And that goes, you know, his producer, Kato Adlan, who's been with him forever as well. Amazing guy. He keeps, you know, he keeps nurturing that relationship too. Matias, who's been working with us for a long time, he's part of the family. And, you know, it's like he sees that, but a lot of people just keep going for the next thing. They see who's hot, who's worked with who, and they jump on that and they keep chasing towards something. But he doesn't need that in a way. He just like says, well, he knows who he is, right? So all he wants to do is surround himself with the people who allow him to continue to be who he is, and even more than that, hopefully. So,
and you've seen this, you know, up close, I guess, a lot. So
And so much of the credit, I mean, all of the credit goes to him, because he's kept us together for so long. And he does whatever it takes to keep us together. Even if that means smuggling me into Norway during the pandemic. But, you know, but he sees the value in that. And there is a lot of that. And I wish more, because I've played with some songwriters who I do love, and they just are frustrating because they don't understand the value in that of like, keep digging, you know, keep digging the hole in the same area and it's going to get deeper. If you keep digging new holes in different parts of the lawn, you're never going to get that deep, right? You're going to have all these 6-inch holes all over the place. Just keep digging, keep digging, and you're going to find some gold. But it's just, you know, so he really understands that.
So it must feel good now to finally be here and know that even though the situation, you can do your what you love again, the music part, together with your friends in the band.
Yeah, feels great.
So you're excited to start, I guess. Start with everything. Yeah.
I'm a little like bummed out because I don't have a drum set with me during quarantine, but I have a pandeiro, which is a Brazilian tambourine type instrument, and I'm just worried about Sandra's neighbors, but I can't just playing the pandeiro.
Where are you situated now in Bergen?
He's got a great hibbel in Mühlenpries in Bergen.
That's a great area.
It's like a studio apartment, and I luckily don't have neighbors to the left and right, but there is someone above me, and I've often debated going up there and just being like, hey, am I being too loud down there? But
as long as you do it in the daytime, it's okay, right?
Yeah, that's what I figure.
Yeah. There was one thing you said to me on the phone yesterday about jet lag. You had as I tipped, how to deal with jet lag. You learned something. You went a lot back and forth, I know, between Europe, Bergen.
Because I've been doing this my whole life, right? Mm-hmm. So you sort of try a different way. And the Norway to America one, that's always been a challenging one for me. But you know, so what I discovered by accident, we were touring Japan in 2017 and we came back, and on the flight, they didn't have, because I don't do, you know, I'm a vegan. I don't.
Are you vegan now? I knew you were a vegetarian, but.
Yeah. I've been vegetarian since you and I knew each other, but I became vegan about 3 or 4 years ago.
Oh, I didn't know. Great.
And on the, I guess like I forgot to pre-order the meal or something. I don't know. So on our flight back from Japan, they didn't have anything I could eat, so I was like, well, I'll just not eat. That's not the end of the world. And that's the other beautiful thing about sort of challenging your body in different ways, like once you've been able to fast, then like not having food around, it's not a stressful situation. You know, so many times like, well, what am I going to eat? Well, there's the option of just not eating at all, you know. and it's not going to kill you. It's
have
fine.
A glass of water,
like, it's, but so much of a lot of us human beings, we get really hung up, especially with water too. You ever notice that? So many people are like, oh, I need water. I need to bring water. So do you really though? Do you really need to bring?
That's me, man. I'm like, where's my water? I'm going to dehydrate. Oh my God.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. You got saliva. Swallow that. I don't know. Yeah. Like,
you're going to survive anyway without water.
Yeah. Sandra and I laugh about this because sometimes we'll go for a run, and if we're bringing someone else along, they're like, oh, I got to get my water bottle. And we're just, I haven't brought a water bottle on a run ever.
I have, but we do long runs though, so it's different.
Yeah, you're doing longer runs, but
I don't bring it on short ones. Definitely nothing.
So I just mean to say, like, hey, if you're ever in a situation where there might not be anything to eat, that's okay.
Yeah.
Just consider, because when we call it a fast, when we give it a name, suddenly it's okay, right? So if you're just going around saying, "Oh my God, there's no food, I'm going hungry." Well, that's a different thing than saying, I'm going to fast today.
As soon as
we put the word fast on it, it becomes okay, right? Yeah, so just consider that. Yeah. If there's nothing around, well, I'm fasting now, you know? And so what I found by accident was when I came to Norway from Japan and I hadn't eaten for 24 hours, I felt great, like, and I was right on schedule. So now what I do is whenever I'm coming into Norway, I just plan it out so that I'm not eating for, 24 hours, maybe 20 hours, so just try to just fast when you're flying, and then don't eat until it makes sense again in the new time zone. So once you're here,
your body regulates faster probably.
Because your sleep pattern is so much influenced by your digestion.
It is.
You really need to think about that. So I found that to be really helpful.
Yeah. No, but that's a great tip. I definitely want to try more fasting. I have an insane metabolism, though. So,
You do. And I don't recommend fasting for you. And I also have a great metabolism, and I don't fast either. I don't, as much as I just talked about, I don't really subscribe to the fasting thing as just a willy-nilly, you know, I should fast. I don't see the point in that. If you have metabolism that's working for you, why would you fast?
No.
If your microbiome is healthy, why would you fast? You know?
It is. That's more important for me, though, to eat right than to fast.
Eat
properly. I did learn a lot of things along the way about things I could eat and couldn't eat. And definitely I'm better off being vegan as you. Because for years I was just stuffing myself with the cheese and milk. And I was always like, my stomach was always really bad. So when I quit that, I was like, whoa. But I grew up with like a glass of milk and my mother saying, drink your milk. You have to be strong, your teeth, your bones.
We all grew up with that.
Yeah, and I loved cheese. I was like, you know, I was addicted to yellow cheese. I could just sit and eat yellow cheese. Like, only that.
See, you had a harder journey than me because I never really cared about cheese. It was good, but I was like, whatever.
Giving up cheese.
That wasn't hard for me.
You know, the hardest part.
I think that's the hardest part for
people. It was. Yeah. I gave up meat, you know, just in my 20s, I decided to stop eating meat. I did eat some fish. I did eat some chicken every now and then, but giving up meat was simple. Giving up cheese, going from vegetarian and thinking that I was going to be vegan was like so scary that I, you know, I had to stop and think, am I really, is it possible? What will happen? You know, will there be like some kind of reaction? And of course there wasn't.
Especially when you're active, right? People think, well, how, where are you going to get your protein? How are you working out so much? And people get so weird about it. And it's like, they're shocked when they hear that you're as active as you are and that you're vegan. And it's like, it's not that hard. And honestly, I would say if you're not someone who enjoys nutritional science, you don't enjoy like learning about what vitamins and minerals are in which foods, then being a vegan, that is a tough thing for you because you really are probably going to wind up eating French fries and beer and think it's okay. Yeah. But I love learning and I love that stuff. So every time I cut something out of my diet, I had to learn where I could get it from. And then it would lead me to all these new different types of foods and be like, oh, I didn't know, you know, there's, you know, calcium in broccoli. I didn't know that. That's amazing. You know, whatever. Like,
amazing.
So it's really fun if you're into it. It's all just like learning.
It is a learning process. And for some people, it will go faster. You will learn faster. Some people just need to take one step at a time. And I really believe in that also. You don't have to throw everything overboard overnight. You know, you can just do one meal at a time, one day of the week.
And if you're someone who's not going to put the time into learning that kind of stuff, then do get a nutritionist, like get help. You know, just get help.
There's a lot of information now, maybe too much, you know, but a little bit before we end this, I see we went a little longer, but it's been great.
Sorry, everybody, I hope we're not boring you.
this is normal though for the podcast going long.
I'm listening. I know how you roll here.
So a little bit of the, because we've been talking about this a little bit before, but the love of Bergen. You love that city. What is it, just to give those Bergensere a little love now? What is it with Bergen? It's not only you. It's like I just had an American friend going to Bergen and was like, oh my God, it's amazing. And you know the story with Sid Garza Hillman that was on the podcast, the California.
He just was like,
and he heard about you and Sondre, and he was like, oh, they have a new friend, so I want to meet them in Bergen. And I was listening to one of his latest podcast episodes now, and he was like, thanks for patroning me and supporting me, and I'm saving up to going to Bergen. Oh, you thought I forgot about that, did you? No.
Yeah.
I'm still, you know, he wants to go to Bergen. That's what he wants to do. So what is it with Bergen, coming from wherever we come from?
You know, it's interesting because I can honestly say it's not typically we go to a place on vacation and we think, oh, this is the best place ever, right? Of course, because you're on vacation, you don't have a care in the world, it's wonderful, whatever. But that's why I know that I can say, no, there is something special about Bergen, because I've been coming here for 10 years. So it's not like I just saw Bergen and was like, oh, this is so cute, I love it here, you know. I mean, I know this place, and I can tell you still that it is a wonderful place. And like anywhere in the world, what makes that place special? It's the people, right? It's always the people. It comes down to the people. Buildings are buildings. They're beautiful. They're not. The architecture's cool or it's not, you know. But the people there, that's what sticks, right? So Bergen, if we talk about the city without the people, it is just a beautiful place because they really did a great job of maintaining the tradition, like the old architecture, while still trying to, you know, progress and make more modern buildings and stuff and make things convenient. So they, you know, they take their, they're really considerate about holding on to what makes this place beautiful. And they try to keep that in consideration whenever they're building around it. So the weather is a thing, right? That's like maybe not the thing that people go, ooh, I love the weather. But like I said before, I mean, it's raining, you're on the coast, so it's raining all the time. As you've mentioned, and it's true, it's typically warmer in Bergen. So that's a plus side.
Definitely in the winter, yeah.
Yeah, but there is somewhat of like, you know, if anyone's been to Seattle or something, you know, it's similar to that. But, you know, it's you just sort of get over it. And I like that, like, no one really uses umbrellas here. You just sort of, you got your rain jacket on and you get to where you're going. And you just accept it as it is. And I'm going to switch out my headphones because they're running out of juice here.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine.
Is this audio still okay if I talk like this?
Yeah, it's still okay. Yeah, it's a little louder though.
Oh, okay. So I'll do my pillow talk.
Yeah. It's fine. What I do here is myself in a little bit of an echo in the background.
Oh, okay. Then let me put these back in. It's just that they were running out.
Yeah, that's cool.
So anyway, the weather is a thing, but you get over that and it's just like when you see this city and you can't help but feel connected to all of the people who built this city and who lived here first. And there's like, you can almost just, it's almost palpable, like all of the history of this place. And the people who live here are very demonstrative of their feelings and the way they speak and talk, and their actions and their interactions are very friendly. And I was always surprised to hear that everyone, like Norwegians, consider themselves to be quite cold people.
Maybe a little reserved.
I could see the reserved thing a little bit, but I've never felt that Norwegians are cold. I've only felt that they've been very welcoming and loving and warm people. And you know, you sort of have to do that. If you live in a typically cold environment, you know, the only way to be is warm.
Yeah.
So, you know, so it makes sense that people would be like that. And I guess I wish I could give you a better answer as to what makes this place special. But I think it's just the thing that you have to, if you're someone whose principles and sort of life ideals are in line with Norwegians' culture, then when you get here, you feel at home. And that's how it was for me. I felt like, oh my God, these people feel the same way I do about what's important in life. And like, you know, they enjoy the same things. Not like nature, being so focused on nature. There's not enough of that in America. And I felt a kinship with that. Like being able to just, you know, jump naked into a fjord at just some random point in the day. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Like that's you know, that's how it should be. Like, yeah, take your clothes off, jump in a...
Yeah.
It's for me, it's the greatest way to be.
Now I lost you on the audio, actually.
So I don't know. There we are. I don't think I gave a good answer there. But
no, but I think the answer is great because you said the people, and I think that's what it's about. It's just a little bit different. It's like Bergen is the largest, smallest city in the world, or the smallest, largest city in the world. There's just something about the, you know, there's always been a great vibe. I lived there for many years, and when I go back there, I was there now a few months ago, and I was so nostalgic just going around, having all these sensations that I used to have. And it was a very strange.
Well, that's maybe it, right? The nostalgia of it, like the feeling of like you've been here before, which you literally have, but even if you haven't, you're like, I've been here before in my dreams. Like I feel like this is you know, human beings, like this is the stock of human beings that I want to be a part of. You know, I don't know, it's just It's really great. And, you know, Bergensers themselves, they're probably too close to it to really give a good answer as well.
And you, I know that you, because you love Bergen and maybe you love Norway too, you love Sondre, you love your friends there, you've actually learned some Norwegian, Bergen. Can you speak a little bit for us?
En litt, men jeg trenger masse øven.
Du får øve deg litt nå fremover når du i Bergen.
Ja, jeg snakker bergensk fordi det en eneste å måtte snakke på.
Ja.
Eneste å måtte snakke på. Men, jeg prøver så godt jeg kan, men jeg en litt out of practice.
You're a little out of practice, but you'll get to it, But great, Dave, I want to say thanks a lot for taking the time this morning. Thank you for calling me your friend. I'm proud to be really looking forward to meeting you when you get here. We'll see how much time you have if we're doing a run, a 5K on the trails. Will you get to practice a little bit running some trails there in Bergen or?
Yeah, I'm definitely, because I got these new shoes, Gore-Tex. It's raining right now.
Yeah.
That's okay. I got the Gore-Tex sneakers.
You do.
Go hit it.
Yeah. So amazing. Let's cross our fingers for the result from the election so you can return and Trump.
Man, you know what's funny, though, Marius, is that if it goes into a contingent election, right, and if the Congress and the Senate, if they fail to elect a president and vice, because the Congress will elect the president and the Senate will elect the vice president.
Uh-huh.
If they fail to do it in time for the inauguration on January 20th, then the automatic president is the Speaker of the House.
Yeah, which is Nancy Pelosi.
Pelosi. Yeah. So our she would be great. Female president might be Nancy Pelosi.
Wow. That would be amazing too. Instead of an old man. We need, I'm going to say this right out, we need women to rule the world because this world is going out west with the men ruling. It's like
Joe Biden has much of a better alternative.
He's definitely.
He's an old white man and everyone's sort of like over that.
But you see like countries now that have female leaders, they did a lot better with handling the COVID situation. Like New Zealand, New Zealand, Norway, Denmark, Germany,
Well, that's great to hear.
Yeah, it is.
I don't know what the problem is, man. It's just too much misogyny, and it's hard to get out of that.
What you can do, actually, there's a great, if you can get the NRK TV where you are, you can probably just stream it now, because here in Norway, it's going to be open to you, but you're going to look for a documentary series that was just released called UXA by Thomas Seltzer. He's this Norwegian TV personality, also a musician with Turbo Negro. He's the bass player of Turbo Negro, if you know that band. Do you know
them?
You don't know? No, okay, it's a Norwegian band. It's you can check them out. Turbo Negro. They've been pretty big.
Right,
but anyways, he was born in up north in the U.S. and moved to Norway when he was 6 or 7 with his family. And he went back now to visit his family. He's done it 4 years ago to just figure out why is this happening. You know, so it's a good documentary series. He's he sees it kind of from the inside, and the industrial belt and the old, what they say, the rust belt with the iron production and everything, how the industry has gone down and people's lives have, you know, they have kind of lost the American dream. So it's an interesting one. You can search that up and watch
an episode. What do you say?
It's UX? I think it's called UXA. But if you just, if you have a laptop there and you just type in tv.nrk.no, you're going to find it on the front page there. It's the streaming of the NRK, the Norsk Rikskringkasting, which is the state television. But it's great. That's a great one. I'm going to link to it in the podcast show notes also. So,
oh, good. Okay.
Yeah. But great. I'm going to put this out today. I'm sitting in Thale's little studio here. I got my laptop. I think I got everything I need to just hit this together with an intro.
Well, I just want to say hi to all your listeners, and it's a pleasure to be here. And if I bored any of you, I apologize, but feel free to send me a note.
They can follow you. They can follow you at Instagram. Are you calling yourself Herman still?
No, David Heilman on Instagram.
Yeah, I'll link to that also.
That's probably the best way to reach out. But
yeah. You do.
Yeah, so I'm happy to elaborate on anything, and also happy to apologize for boring anyone.
I don't think you bored anyone. If you bored anyone, they would have turned off by now. So that's the good thing with the podcast. Yeah. If you don't want to listen to it, you can just go to the next one.
There you go.
Yeah, but thanks again, Dave, and have a great day and a few the next week being in quarantine, and good luck with everything in Bergen.
Tusen takk.
So we'll speak soon, man. Thanks again. Okay.
Ha det bra.
Det var Dave. Fantastisk fyr. Han er jo bare utrolig gøy å henge med og snakke med. De som har mulighet får prøve å komme seg og se Sondre spille med bandet sitt med Dave på trommer. Det er virkelig en opplevelse, det kan jeg love dere. Så sitter jeg her nå og sjekket nyhetene. Ingenting er avgjort i presidentvalget. Jeg vet ikke hva som kommer til å skje. Men uansett hva som skjer, så må vi bare jobbe videre her hjemme på Berget. Vi har det tross alt helt utrolig godt. Ingenting å klage på. Noensinne. Selv om det er lov å sutre litt innimellom og bli litt grinte, men ta 2 steg tilbake og tenke at det er tross alt ikke så gærent. Vi går inn i en høst nå, men vi skal fikse dette. Spørsmålet er, vil Bislett være åpent inndørs i vinter? Det lurer jeg på, for det er et sted jeg liker å løpe når det blir holka ute. Uansett hvor du befinner deg, få på deg piggskoa når det blir glatt. Kle deg godt, ikke gå og frys. Ta vare på deg og dine mennesker og dyr. Tusen takk igjen for at dere lytter, sitter her hele veien. Det er helt fantastisk å lage podcast og bare ha muligheten til å gjøre dette. Og hvis noen sitter inne med en idé, dette har jeg sagt flere ganger, det er rom for flere. Jeg har hørt på en ny norsk podcast nå som heter Henningsverden. Den mannen er slett ikke verst, skal jeg si dere. Han lager en podcast med masse interessante gjester over tema som kanskje ikke tas opp så mange andre steder. Så jeg kan anbefale dere å sjekke inn om Henning også. Mulig jeg skal få han hit. Jeg må høre om han løper da. Ok, nå får du bare fyke videre der ut i dagen. Og om du kom til denne litt senere, som jo vanlig er, det er ikke alle som hører på dagen, så håper jeg at vi er et godt sted i forhold til dette valget over Atlanterhavet. Ok, carpe diem, mine venner. Carpe diem.